This is Digital Story Podcast number 834, March 15th, 2022. Today's theme is putting together your back pocket list. I'm Derek Story. Sometimes when you make things too big, they don't happen. Take, for example, our photography bucket list that includes exotic destinations such as Africa or India. Great stuff, but we don't want to sit idle while we wait for them to happen. So in the meantime, you can build your back pocket list. What is that, you ask? Keep listening to today's TDS Photography Podcast to learn more. I hope you enjoy the show. I've been thinking about the place where we are in 2022. We're able to move about with quite a bit more freedom, but things aren't exactly normal yet, are they? We're in the sort of intermediate zone. And even though I'm not quite ready to get on a plane and go fly to Africa right now, I do want to get out. I want to take pictures. So I was thinking about this concept that I call the back pocket list. It's like a bucket list, but much smaller and more attainable. It contains locations that we can reach in an afternoon or on a day off. They're accessible, but still beautiful. So I started building my back pocket list of 5 places that I like in Sonoma County, and I set the goal of visiting and photographing each one before the end of the year. So the idea is that, yes, we may get to have a big trip or a couple big trips this year. Who knows how that's going to work out. Hopefully, you'll get a workshop in there somewhere too. But while we're doing that, you know, we just don't want to let our gear sit idle. We don't want to let our skills get rusty. And we probably don't want to take more pictures in the backyard because, well, we've been doing that for a couple of years as it's been. So I'm thinking, all right, so what's kind of an in-between zone here? In between Africa, which is way over there and right now not very attainable for me, and my backyard, which is right here, but I'm getting tired of. And I was thinking, there are all these wonderful locations that I know about here, and it feels like every time I go to one of these locations, even though I know it, photographically, it's like I've never been there before. I always see new things. I always find interesting subjects to photograph. And I come away and I look at the pictures afterwards and I go, I need to go there more often. Do you ever do that? Where you go, I just need to go there more often. I need to do that more often. So I thought, okay, let's formalize this a little bit because, like so many things, if we don't make a list and kind of set some goals and do all that stuff, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen, right? So instead of going out to one of the locations on your back pocket list, you end up mowing the yard, or you end up doing, you know, something around the house, or you end up watching a game on TV, whatever your other things, your procrastination things happen to be, or things that have less resistance than actually, you know, getting your gear together, getting in the car, getting out there, doing a little hike, getting some fresh air, taking pictures, come back, processing them, and doing all that stuff. So your back pocket list is something that's very attainable, yet very rewarding. And I mean, I think that's a really great combination. Now, to give you an idea, or a better idea of what I'm talking about, I'm going to give you my back pocket list that I've developed for this year. So in addition to anything else that I do, I want to make sure that I go to these 5 places. And here they are right now. They're all in Sonoma County. I can get to them all very easily. Go out on an afternoon, do some photography, come back, play with the pictures that night, that sort of thing. The first one is Armstrong Woods. And, you know, there are some wonderful redwood groves in Northern California. In fact, we're going to some of the best in a few weeks for our workshop that's coming up that I'm so looking forward to. But Armstrong Woods is also a very nice redwood grove, but, you know, smaller than the biggies that we're going to spend time at the workshop. I can drive there in 30 minutes. I can spend about an hour in there, and then I can drive home 30. So, I mean, the whole thing is an afternoon at best, but yet I come away with great shots every time I go. And in fact, I've already checked this one off my back pocket list. I've already done this in part because I wanted to, you know, test my theory, but in part also because I wanted to start preparing for our Humboldt Redwoods workshop that's coming up. And I wanted to get some practice shooting in the redwoods because, believe it or not, they're not easy. They're not easy, depending on the lighting especially. So that's my first one, Armstrong Woods, 30 minutes away. Spend an hour, hour and a half there. It's lovely. 30 minutes home. You come away with a bunch of great shots. My second one, also in Sonoma County, a little further north, is Fort Ross. Now, Fort Ross has been a stop that we've done on our bodega workshops, and it's a stop that I make a lot of times when I'm headed up north. And no matter how many times I've been there, I always find something new and I always come away with terrific shots. So I've got to keep that one in the rotation because it's so vibrant and changing and interesting. And it was a Russian fort. It was really a Russian fort that the state of California has preserved. And so you have all of that interesting stuff, all those structures and a little bit of the history that's there. An actual fort, I mean, it has cannons and everything kind of fort. And then it also has beautiful scenic ocean views and fences that go along hillsides and, you know, all that stuff. So it's just a lovely place. And on top of all that, they have free car charging there for electric cars. So that's another really nice aspect for me. So Fort Ross made my back pocket list for this year. The third one, now we're going to go directly to the ocean, but closer, we're going to go to Bodega Bay for Duncan's Landing. And Duncan's Landing is one of my favorite views in all of California. It's one of my favorite ocean views in all of California. And that's really saying something because there are a lot of great ocean views in California, but there's just something about this place, the rock formations in the ocean, the rugged coastline, the coves, it has everything. You know, you get a nice, you know, elevated viewpoint on it. Then you can bring a picnic lunch or something and just make an afternoon there. There's some great picnic benches with wonderful views. Or you can park your car and enjoy it and just hang out in your car if you want. If you're living the van life, you can back your van up to the ocean view and just hang out there. I mean, it's just one of those spots. It's easy to get to. It's right off Highway 1. You just have to know where it is. You pull off there, get out, walk around a bit. You can walk down the hill to the beach and do some photography there. It's one of those things that it looks so simple and it's so beautiful, yet there's so much to it. I mean, the more time you spend there, the more things that you find. I'm definitely putting that on my back pocket list for this year. I want to get my 2022 version of Duncan's Landing with some of the new camera gear that I have coming. Yes. My fourth one is Sugarloaf Ridge State Park. Now, I haven't been there for a few years and I'm really missing it. And it is just the opposite of the ocean. This is our opportunity to go up into the forest a bit. And they have wonderful campsites that you can reserve ahead of time. There's lots of hiking. There's two major hikes that are just absolutely beautiful with big payoffs when you get to the top. They have very nice facilities, bathrooms with flush toilets, showers, you know, that you use quarters to pay for. They have all that kind of stuff. They have a ranger there all the time, which is, you know, really cool. And the campsites are beautiful. I could go there. I could just drive up there easily after work one day, set up camp before dark, especially now that daylight savings is in play. Have a nice evening there. Get up in the morning, take a nice hike, get lots of pictures, come back to the campsite, and then head out and come home. and just have a lovely time, get lots of pictures, and I'm home in 30 minutes. It's just crazy, you know, and wonderful having something that beautiful that close and a whole different look than I get at the ocean. So that's number four, Sugarloaf Ridge State Park. And then the last one is a winery, because we've got to have a winery on the list here. And we have so many beautiful ones here in Sonoma County. But I'm picking a Ferrari Carano winery in Dry Creek, because ultimately it has everything, as many of the wineries do. But this one has been a favorite of mine for a while. Again, I can get to it in about 30 minutes. They have really terrific architecture that's beautiful, statuesque architecture that's integrated into this beautiful setting, this beautiful wine country setting. And then on top of that, they have these gardens that are nicely cultivated with running water through them and little baby waterfalls and stuff like that. So you can do big scenics of the wine country. You can do architectural photography. And then you can do some nice close-up, you know, garden photography with spectacular garden. And then when you're all done, you can do a little bit of wine tasting, which is a really nice way to finish off a photo shoot here in Sonoma County. So that one is on my back pocket list as well. So these are five places that I'm committed to going to this year. I know I'm going to come away with great photos. I'm going to test new camera gear there. I'm going to keep my skills sharp. And then when I get an opportunity to do something big, I'm going to be ready to go. I'm going to be fully versed in my equipment, you know, my new OM-1 and the new lens and all that stuff. And my skills will be sharp. And then I'll be ready to fully take advantage of something that may appear on my bucket list. So just to draw this all together, what photo opportunities do you have within a few hours' drive? Consider building your own back pocket list. Revisit those sites. And if you have some new camera gear, which I think some of you will, what a great place to test it out. Add some new, beautiful images to your library. Keep your skills sharp and be ready to go when that bucket list item does come along. Don't use iCloud for long-term photo backup. And this is an article from Petapixel, and I have the link to it in the show notes. I thought this was interesting because even though the headline is, you know, a little bit negative and all that, the article itself really raises a good point, and I want to cover that right now. So what I'm going to do is read a bit of the article just for a minute, and then I'm going to share how I approach iCloud backup because I use it and I love it. So I'm going to suggest a few adjustments just in case you don't have yours set up this way, you might want to consider. But first, let's kind of get to the story itself. And this is, an article on Petapixel. My friend Bill just returned from a family vacation in Costa Rica and shot lots of photos and videos on his iPhone, including some killer shots of breakfasts with local monkeys. No surprise that once he got home, he checked his iPhone storage and found that it was 98% full. Just a few more snaps and he'd be totally out of storage space. His solution? I'll just put them all on iCloud, then delete them off my phone, he told me. Backing up on iCloud, then deleting photos locally on the iPhone is actually the worst thing Bill could do to free up space. Because once they're uploaded to iCloud, the next time it scans his phone for automatic backup, it will notice that Costa Rica pics are gone and in turn delete them from the cloud backup as well. Ever notice the fine print when you try to delete a photo? This item will be deleted from iCloud photos and on all of your devices. For pure long-term photo backup, because of these weird arcane rules, Apple's iCloud is about the worst place to go because it's not designed for that. Apple's help support reps told me over several calls that iCloud is meant for backing up your devices, not just your photo library, and a way to have that same data on all of your Apple devices, not just the iPhone. As Apple puts it, automatically upload and safely store all of your photos and videos in iCloud so you can browse, search, and share from any of your devices. Notice the word backup doesn't appear there anywhere. All right, so that, you know, he kind of raises that issue. And there's a couple things here that if you're going to be a serious iPhone photographer, which, you know, that's sort of what happens these days because the cameras are so good on the phones, we end up using them more and more, myself included. So here's how I approach the situation. First of all, he's right. You don't want to think that you can delete photos off your device if you're using iCloud backup. You don't want to think you can delete them off your device and that they'll still be in the cloud. They won't be. You know, that's Apple does do that. But there are a few things that I recommend that you do if you want to use iCloud as a convenient photo backup, even though he says not to. But I do. But here's how I do it. There's really three things. First of all, you have to make sure you have enough storage on iCloud, right? So my storage needs have gone up over the years. And so I'm not just doing 5 gigabytes because that's not going to work. You know, the free thing's not going to work. So they have different plans with different amounts of storage. You have to make sure that you have plenty of headroom. So choose a plan that gives you enough headroom so that if you do have a very active month of taking pictures, that you don't run out of storage in iCloud itself. Now, it will warn you, but it's maybe not something that you want to deal with at the moment that you get the warning, if you know what I mean. The second thing, whenever I buy an iPhone, I get as much storage on that phone as I can afford at the time because I want to have all those images that go onto my iPhone be able to stay there. I don't ever want to have to be deleting images off the iPhone because that in turn will delete them out of the cloud. So lots of storage on the phone. Now, how do I manage that? Well, this is the key to the whole thing. On all of my devices, the Mac, the iPhone, everywhere, what I choose is optimize storage in the settings. I choose optimize storage in the settings. What this does is then Apple will create an optimized version that doesn't take up much space that will show up on your phone. It'll be optimized for your phone. You choose it on your Mac, you get an optimized version in Photos on your Mac that's optimized for the Mac, and then the masters live in the cloud. So that way, you're not taking up very much space on your devices because you have these optimized photos that look fantastic. Then, let's say that you're going to do some work on one of those images on your MacBook. Then when you go to work on that image, you do have to be connected to the internet, but most of us are all the time. Then it will download the master from iCloud. So you have that master file to work with. You do your thing, and then it will create an edited, optimized version, and that will be on your Mac, and the master will go back to living in the cloud. When you do that, you can have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of images in your iCloud photo library up in, you know, on their server, wherever that happens to be, and you won't run out of space. You won't run out of space. Now, the other thing that I do, and this is for my other work, for my professional work, I'm not using this workflow for my professional work. For that, I'm using Capture One Pro. I'm shooting big RAW files, everything from a Fuji GFX 100S medium format camera to my Olympus cameras to my Pentax APS-C to my Fujifilm X100V. All of that serious work then goes into Capture One Pro. And then that's backed up on hard drives. And, you know, I have a whole nother workflow for that to protect those images. Now, I do take the best of those images and put them in my iCloud library so I can carry them around my phone. And basically what I do with that is that once I'm done editing and working with those shots that I really like, then I export out a high resolution JPEG, right? Not a RAW file, but a high resolution JPEG. Then I just put those in my iCloud library and then they are stored in there with everything else. And then that way I can have the 10, 15 best shots from a photo shoot in iCloud without, you know, clogging the whole thing up, because I probably started with a couple hundred raw files that, of course, take up a lot of space. So I do use iCloud. I really like it. It's been very dependable for me. It's super convenient because it is on all my devices. But you do have to have a little forethought, and you do have to make a couple adjustments if you're someone like us who takes a lot of pictures, and you want to make sure that you don't run out of headroom. You want to make sure all your stuff is available, and you don't want to accidentally delete something because you run out of space on your device. You take it off there, and then boom, it's gone out of the library. Now, you get a warning for that. You get a warning for that. But nonetheless, set up a nice workflow so that you never have to deal with that situation. And then you can just shoot, have a great time, and those photos will be available on all your devices. So I thought this article was good in the sense that it raised the issue. I just would have finished it off a bit differently. We have a few online workshops coming up that I want to mention in May. We have the infrared photography workshop. That's an online event that starts in May. And then in August, we have the ultimate black and white photography workshop. And those are both very popular events. We're doing them again in 2022. And if you're interested in either of those, signups have been open for a bit, and they're starting to fill up. So I wanted to give you a heads up just to make sure that if you wanted to attend, that you'd go and reserve your spot. They're very affordable, and you just go ahead, pay your tuition up front. If you're a Patreon Inner Circle member, you get a discount, which is always lovely to have. And the discount codes are on our Patreon site. And then in September and November, we have two more physical workshops coming up. The Eastern Sierra workshop in September. That one's just going to be dynamite. It's one of my favorite physical workshops that we do. And then we're going back to the Oregon coast in November. All of this stuff is on our workshops page. And all you have to do is click on the link in the show notes, click on workshops up at the top nav bar on the digital story, or just go to thenimblephotographer.com and click on workshops there. The Humboldt Redwoods workshop is sold out, coming up here in just a few weeks. That's going to get our physical workshops off the ground. I cannot wait. And those of you that are attending, I'm very much looking forward to seeing and working with you. If you're interested in these other events, infrared, ultimate black and white, Eastern Sierra, or Oregon Coast, cruise over to the site, reserve your place, and join us in 2022. This is going to be an excellent workshop season, and I can't wait to be out working with all of you. It's going to be so much fun, so much fun. How to pose hands for better portraits. And you can read this entire article on thephotographer.com. And I think it's kind of cool because it addresses one of the more difficult aspects of portrait photography, which is what do you do with the hands, the subject's hands. So this is what the author had to say. And then I'll have a few comments about it. I have just a couple paragraphs here. I had no desire to be a portrait photographer when I started learning photography in college. The amount of work it takes to connect with people, pose them, and take powerful images felt daunting. A few years later, I realized being an empathetic human was an optimal job skill for portraits. Connecting with people became very easy once I leaned in and felt the energy in the room. The challenge was knowing how to direct them into natural-looking poses once we developed a rapport. An even more significant obstacle was learning how to pose hands in a way that makes sense. As it turns out, hands are a challenge for people on both sides of the camera. Everything can be going right in a portrait image. However, if the hands are stressed or don't make sense, that's the only thing viewers will see. An easy solution is have the hands at the sides or hide them in pockets. This quick fix can leave a lot on the table. Knowing how to work with hands in ways that make sense can elevate your portrait work. More often than not, hands will be soft regardless of where they're positioned. Any stress in the hands will translate as tension. Below are a few tips to make hand posing easier. So then what the author does is he goes through each of these types of portraits. I'm going to read them to you right now and gives you tips for posing hands for that type of portrait. The first one is sitting in a chair and then on steps or a stool or an apple box, posing hands when standing, utilizing surroundings when standing, you know, using the hands to utilize surroundings, have them doing something, and beauty photography. So it's a nice little article. There are visuals for each of these different types of portraits. So you get an idea of, you know, how to pose the hands, and you just get to look and see what was done in the images. And then there's some nice text that go with them. So if this is something that you want to improve, then I highly recommend taking a look at this article. I think it was super helpful. And I'm bookmarking it and going to hang on to it for my portrait work as well. Okay, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. First thing I want to mention, this is a follow-up to last week's podcast. I did get the gig at Sonoma International Film Festival, which is later this month. And this came about when I was on the photo shoot, you know, where I was walking you through a photo shoot last week. And part of what I do is make sure I go around and introduce myself to other photographers. One of the photographers that was working the photo shoot I was working also is the head photographer for the Sonoma International Film Festival. She asked me if I was able to work it, if I was interested. I said that I was. And then over the course of a few days, we were going back and forth via email. She wanted to see a lot of my work, a lot of my event work. It wasn't like I just got the job because I was standing there. But once she saw my event work, she goes, yeah, this sounds great. I'm really excited about having you on board. And so this will be a fun one for me to talk about. It's at the end of this month, at the end of March. And I just wanted to close that loop and say, yeah, I did get the gig, and I will be talking about it after it happens. The Sonoma International Film Festival, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I really do. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support us week in and week out. They also provide great tips for me, make sure I stay on course. And a lot of them are the folks that end up at our physical workshops and our online workshops. It's like a family, is the best way I can put it. It's like a family. I really get to know everyone in the Inner Circle. I end up spending time with them one way or another, whether we're having communications on the website, whether they're showing up for a physical workshop or showing up for an online workshop. And I just love every facet of, you know, this whole thing, this whole community. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of Digital Story. Take a look around, and hopefully you will join this elite group in 2022. They're wonderful people, and they help keep the show on the air, and they help keep terrible ads off the air on the show. If for no other reason, you should thank them for that. And finally, I want to give a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. I'm still in the middle of that remodeling project in the other room here at the studio. It's going to be, in addition to a lot of things, it's going to be the printing room. And so I'm getting all the paper that I had stored all over the place. I cannot believe how disheveled this room had become. And I'm finding paper in places that I didn't even know I had it stored, and then going, wow, I have a box of that? It's been kind of delightful, actually. And so I have some very fun surfaces that I did not know I have that are now all organized in one area so that when it's time to print, I can go over there and say, I want this surface or I want that surface, I want this size or that size. And having and finding some of these different surfaces I hadn't worked with in a while kind of got me all jazzed about printing again. And so I'm sort of in this renaissance of inkjet printing thanks to finding these paper stocks. And I just mention this because getting new paper, sort of like what we're talking about with the back pocket thing, getting back out in the field and how it revitalizes your photography, getting your hands on some new paper and trying it out gets you re-energized about printing as well. And if you haven't done that for a while, I recommend going over to the Red River site. All you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Go over there, nose around, try out some new stocks, read what they have to say. They talk about all the different types of papers. You know, I did an article on the joy of black and white this weekend, and I talked about that the last step, I think, is printing your black and white shots and how much fun it is. And then all I had to do is go to Red River Paper and say, you know, what are the best paper surfaces or recommended paper surfaces for printing black and white? And then they have it. They have a whole page dedicated to great paper for black and white printing, and they have it for other categories as well. This is the kind of information that you can get there. Then try some of this new stuff and see what you think and get excited about printing. So Red River Paper, they have a terrific Facebook page as well at facebook.com/Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, and they are just terrific. There's no other way to put it. Big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, get those creative juices going, and then come back and see me next Tuesday. Until then,